I read somewhere that people were stealing your sponges.
Everybody,
like, you started realizing that, oh, I'm using a sponge, and then my sponge disappears, right?
I swear they would sprout legs and walk away.
Hey, babies. Welcome to the Dr. Beauty Podcast hosted by me, Dr. Anna Guanche. I'm so excited you're here. We plan to educate, inspire, and entertain you. This podcast is not just about beauty. It's about lifestyle, inspiration, life hacks, and of course, beauty. Babies, I am beyond excited to have Rianne Silva here. She is a boss babe, and she's the founder of Beauty Blender and Bounce. And basically, everybody who's anybody and every single person has one of her eggs, at least one. I have probably 20 of them to put their makeup on. And it really does. It's like a game changer for applying makeup. But besides that, you are an amazing boss babe, businesswoman, and someone I admire very much. So I'm excited to have you here and pick your brain.
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you. I'm excited to be here because you're a boss babe and you're a beauty and you provide so much beauty for so many people. So thank you for your contribution to beauty. Oh.
Thank you. There's some funny patients that I have that don't let me go on vacation. They say, if you go on vacation, Calabasas will get uglier by the minute.
I kind of get that.
That's not true, though, but it's funny. So I wanted to ask you, I have like 100 million questions to ask you as a business person.
Shoot.
At what point did you realize that this was going to blow up into something huge, this beauty blender?
Well, you know, it's so funny because when you're an entrepreneur and you have a passion, like I never saw my business as being a global business. When I created Beauty Blender, I'm a makeup artist by profession. That's mm-hmm. what I did for over 25 years, film, television, celebrity, music video.
And yeah, I heard you did some really big names. You're going to have to name drop for us all the people whose makeup you've done, which is pretty incredible, you guys.
Yeah, but so, you know, the last couple of years I've been busy running my business.
Right.
But it's
which is the dream.
It is the dream. I know it is the dream, but I do miss doing business. But all that to say, I just keep my head down and keep working. So when it comes to like realizing when I realized the business was going to be a big business, there are certain landmarks, and I have to say that one of the most memorable times that made me realize like, hey, I guess I'm really onto something here is when Sephora came knocking. When Sephora takes your product, it really is a game changer. You have to be prepared for it though, because mm-hmm. you have to be able to fill the distribution and the supply. The other time would be the very first time I won an Allure Best of Beauty Award, because if you know anything about Allure magazine, right. it is like the beauty Bible. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they really get literally every beauty product across the editor's desks. They receive everything. So to be honored by them the very first time was amazing. I mean, now I have like 14 Best of Beauty Awards, but the first one was kind of like, oh my God, the greatest acknowledgement that, you know, people understand this little crazy pink egg. So
that is true, you guys, between Sephora and Allure, those are like the pinnacles of beauty. And, when Sephora comes knocking on your door, that's pretty amazing. Most people are begging Sephora to carry their products.
Well, you know, it's funny because what do they say? Ignorance is bliss, or there's certain cliche sayings about really just having passion and not really understanding. I really thought one day I want to see my product in the window of Sephora. So very early on, you know, thinking this was a revolutionary product, I knew it was, but you know, you have to convince people. And really the only way Sephora pays attention is if people are demanding your product. So I started reaching out to anybody I could really early and they would all ignore me. So then when they came to me finally, I was like, oh my God, I must have done that's why it was such a huge acknowledgement for me. It was like, oh my God, they're actually acknowledging me.
So for people that are trying to become and trying to grow a business and, you know, bring something to light that wasn't there before. It sounds to me, and you know, I believe, but it also sounds to me like believing in your own product and what you're bringing to light is one of the most important things, so that you keep trying to promote it so that you don't give up on your own thing first, right?
Right. So I think there's some authenticity that has to be there, right? So I know that there's a lot of different ideas about why people want to start a business, right? Mm-hmm. So most of it is driven by money. You know, most of it is like, oh, I need supplemental income, or I need to support my family, whatever it is. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think our consumers are so savvy now that you really need to have a passion behind whatever it is you're trying to build. And I think, you know, because of social media, because of technology, because there's so much information that's passed around the, you know, interwebs, as my son said, you know, you really have to be authentic and you have to have that passion. So absolutely. I think without it, you know.
Well, I
know.
I mean, authentic and have the passion and actually have something that really does is a game changer. And you're, you know, the beauty blender is a game changer. Anyone who's ever used it, who applies their makeup, is just feeling like their skin looks more natural. And this evolved from you after years of doing makeup and realizing there was a need for it. And that I feel like that's a beautiful thing, that you did the work and you put in your hours, but instead of just doing it again and again the same way, you were innovating, creating something different, better, for the people that you're serving. And then you realize, oh, this could be beneficial to everyone. And and to me, that's like a beautiful thing. That's how our whole society moves forward, is people being brave enough to bring to light something that makes things easier for other people, better for other people, you know. And then, and when it's authentic and it's real and it works, it just, it's a crazy success. So I'm excited to have you here. I told you that already, but I'm like super excited.
Thank you. It is. It's all super exciting.
It's time for some name dropping. Who does makeup did you do? We want to hear.
Like when? Like from the beginning?
Give us some.
The beginning of the Bible? In the beginning.
Well, in the beginning, like, when you were just an embryo. Like back in that, in
when
those
I first
days.
Held my first makeup brush.
Yes.
Yeah, no.
No, like who were some of the names?
So my career spanned, I had a very interesting career. So I started in music video during the MTV revolution.
Love.
And from music video, I went into film and television with some of my crossover artists that went from music into film and television. And that's how I started. So in my music career, I worked with P. Diddy for 12 years. I did everything with Brandy, Eve. I worked with Toni Braxton. I worked with Whitney Houston. I have literally a page of artists from my era of music video. I was a very, very popular music video makeup artist.
Wow, and Whitney Houston.
And I did.
Incredible.
I know. I was there with her on the day she passed away.
That's
anyway,
incredible.
That's a different story. But I started with music video. And then when I started working with Brandy, she had already just started Moesha.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my dear friends, Chris Maldonado, rest in peace, who passed away in Aaliyah's plane, Aaliyah died in a plane crash. He was actually working with Brandy at the time. And when he went on that trip, he asked me to go and cover for him with Brandy. So I started working with Brandy, and we all know kind of unfortunately what happened with Chris. I ended up working with Brandy through music, and then I went to Moesha. Then we ended up doing like all of her CoverGirl campaigns and all of her like album covers and movies and everything. And you know, that's how I kind of transitioned from doing music video into television and film, which you have to be in the union for. So it was really amazing when a celebrity brings you with them, because it's easier to get into those unions and stuff. So
So
that's the transition. That's how I went from music video and into film and television. But I had a very interesting career, because back in the day, you know, people kind of pigeonholed you. If you did music video, you couldn't do TV. And if you did TV, you didn't do film. And I was just really fortunate that I did all of those plus editorial.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The makeup styles are different.
Yeah.
Because the lighting is different. And what you need for live television, it transfers differently than, you know, like you're saying, recorded and, you know, all that. So it's all about the opportunity to retouch, right? And
well, it's so funny, because I came from the school of pre-touch so you don't have to retouch.
Right. Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. So I would, and that's where I got my reputation in complexion, because I would make everything look really perfect. And at the end of the day, the producers didn't have to spend so much money on retouching.
Right.
Because before it wasn't digital. It was like hand by hand, frame by frame. Yeah. So,
and yeah, I know that because, you know, and when HD came out, that was a killer because everyone's every single pore shows on the screen and all my patients are complaining about it. But
that's when I created Beauty Blender.
Yeah. I believe you. Yeah. Well, that, so that's what was the catalyst, because that makes sense to me, because people had that nice Gaussian blur, that little blur from the camera, but then they had absolute minute detail showing with every frame. And we used to have to like edit frame by frame, right? And now there's digital ways to frame, you know, to edit.
We can edit on our cell phones now. I mean, before it was, you know, you had to be in an edit bay.
Right.
Or you know, it's just, it's such a different world now that we live in. But literally Beauty Blender was the first high def, if you want to talk about digital high tech tool, because I was hired to be the department head on a show called Girlfriends. And Girlfriends was the first show that was being shot and broadcast in high definition. Mm-hmm. So it required a different makeup application. And they knew this because they hired a traditional makeup artist to begin with. And the makeups looked really heavy because you could see everything, right? Like you were saying. Yeah. So they had hired, they'd asked me to come on because I also had this talent of airbrushing beauty makeup, where airbrushing before had really been used for special effects.
Mm-hmm.
And I, it was me. It wasn't just me, but it was me and a handful of makeup artists.
I was
going to
say, you started that trend?
No, I remember that airbrushing
trend.
Well, you probably, I'm not sure when you learned about it, but it tried to be popular a little bit later. But when I was doing it, you know, it was probably 25 years ago, and we would be breaking down your traditional makeup in bottles with some fluids and then blowing
and
it through a machine.
Using an actual airbrush machine. Yeah, oh, yeah, that's so cool.
And that would give you like this really natural, seamless look that didn't look like you were wearing makeup. And that was perfect for high def, but not practical for set work, because you can't bring your airbrusher to set. First of all, compressors are really loud. Right. And, you know, when they're recording sound, you can't really do a touch up. So that was how Beauty Blender was born.
That's so crazy. Yeah. So cool. And so you were, cause we thought we could get you to make me a sponge. Cause we brought like some wedges and a pair of scissors. And she's like, oh no. It has to be three different types of scissors to make a beauty.
Well, two.
Yeah. Okay. Two.
You need the small little ones and you need a medium size. I mean, I can try, but it's not going to look like a beauty blender. It's going to, and either, you know, honestly, but beauty started, blender didn't look like it looks now when I first started it too. Like I recently, I'm in the Smithsonian. Beauty Blender is in the Smithsonian.
Wow.
And I have my original Beauty Blender in the Smithsonian, and you can see it, and it doesn't look exactly like what you see
now. Is it hot pink?
No, it's not hot pink.
Because it was just wedge color, whatever the color of the wedge
actually
was.
It was the first Beauty Blender that was made for special effects, and it was made out of this different weird material, kind of like an orange material with very big cellular pores, because you would use it to, once you were, right, to add texture, not to take texture away.
Yeah.
So, you know, although that was a tool that was used in special effects, what I did is I redefined it and redesigned it for beauty, because you don't want to create texture with beauty. You want
it's
to remove
opposite.
Yeah, it's the opposite.
Yeah.
So that was one of the main
That's
secrets.
So cool.
Yeah.
So then I read somewhere that people were stealing your sponges.
Everybody.
Like, you started realizing that, oh, I'm using a sponge and then my sponge disappears, right?
I swear they would sprout legs and walk away.
Yeah.
Like literally they would go, we would spend a lot of time sitting on set because that's when we would cut them, because, you know, you do everybody's makeup and then you sit in your set chair on the side of the stage and wait for touch-ups. And we'd just sit there and cut sponges for the next day, because we knew, first of all, I hadn't created blender cleanser yet, and it's not hygienic to be reusing them, right? So every day we would have to cut sponges. So that's what happened.
That's right. You guys, when you get the blender, you can also get the blender cleanser. It's like a little palette almost. Like
it's a little puck. It's a little bar of soap, and it kills 99.7% of all germs and bacteria, and it keeps your blender clean, and it's natural. It's a natural soap, and it's super effective, and it's been super popular. And I have to say, it's actually, you know, Beauty Blender created the category for this kind of sponge. You know, there's a lot of copycats. You'll see other sponges that look like a Beauty Blender.
They're not the same.
People even refer to their other sponge as a Beauty Blender, which is a brand name and not really the product. But
Rude.
The same with Blender Cleanser. We made the first sponge cleanser and now, and sponge and brush cleanser that's in a soap form. And it's, you can buy it wherever we sell Beauty Blender.
No, it's very important to keep your tools clean, you guys, for your complexion. So it's important to wash thoroughly any of your tools, right? But this is awesome. You can wash your brushes with it as well. And can, you know, you just make it a little bit wet and you wring it out and you can put your base on with it, your makeup, and then you can also put your sunscreen on with it. So it's a really great, smooth, even coverage. It's just really so nice. I use it every single day. So, and when I started using it, I couldn't believe that I hadn't used it before. So it just makes it so much easier to apply makeup. I was going to ask you something about it. Do you have any special beauty tips with Beauty Blender?
Just, you know, there is no secret to it. You know, if you can bounce that Beauty Blender on your face, you can get flawless makeup application. There's really no secret. There's no learning curve. I mean, it really is the most simple idea and simply used product. Literally, a child can do makeup like a professional makeup artist. And I think that really is why it's so popular.
Yeah.
You know, whether you're a first-time makeup user or a professional makeup artist, I mean, the pendulum swings very far in both directions.
Yeah.
I mean, you have people that never use makeup before, or people that are professionals that just use it all the time, and they get the same effect. So
yeah.
I wish I had some tricks, but it's just simple. It's bounce, easy.
And you can blend in your concealer. You can actually use it in a brushing, sweeping motion to put on your setting powder. So like my makeup artist.
Well, if you want to bake.
Yeah, when she does baking, she puts a lot of setting powder on and then just slides it along the lower part of my cheek and then also the top part of my face. And it just is. And then you wait a minute, let it set, and then you pat it.
Or you brush it off.
Or brush it off, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I just love it. I am truly a fan.
Well, I'm so honored that you love it because doctors, you know, have a lot of opinions because you're very educated and you have a lot of knowledge. And, you know, I always love it when someone in the medical field actually supports this product because it is a very simple product, but it is a very effective product and it is a very hygienic product, which, you know, it's interesting over the course of many years. There have been, you know, people always try to have a different perspective on your product. And some people say, oh, it's not that hygienic, like especially during COVID, right? I was like, oh my God. But they don't think twice about using their makeup brush for the 5 years, when you've got all these fibers really squoze, is that a word? Squoze tight into a ferrule of, you know, the brush and they just swirl it around in some water and feel like it's clean. I mean, but you know, for some reason, people thought that maybe your sponges don't stay clean and it's, if you don't use my cleanser, maybe not. So anyway, long
right,
story,
you need the cleanser.
For a doctor to support it, I'm very grateful. So thank you.
No, you're welcome. I support it because I, like I said, use it every single day. So
I love it.
And you have a new makeup line. It's called Bounce. It's a skin tint.
Well, I have a complexion line at Sephora. And it is called, the franchise is called Bounce. Within the Bounce franchise, we have Bounce Liquid Whip Foundation, which is my medium to full coverage foundation that's long wear. And this, it comes in packaging right now that's really innovative. And then I have a concealer called Bounce Concealer, which is the most amazing concealer. You can actually use the concealer as a foundation. Oh, I didn't send you any. I've got to send her some.
I got the skin tint.
And then you got my newest baby, which is so, I think probably we sent you skin tint because you are a doctor. Like for me, this is a serum foundation. You know how you have moisture, what are like CC creams and tinted moisturizers? This is like a tinted or, you know, foundation serum. So it looks and feels and the texture is like a serum. It comes in a dropper like a serum, and the coverage is light to medium, but you can sheer it out. You can make it heavier if you want more of a full coverage. But what I love about it is that it has skincare ingredients in it, like niacinamide, hyaluronic acid. There's just peptides. There's like, it's like full of these really beautiful.
That's beautiful. Yeah, multitasking skin, for yeah, your skin.
So it's healthy. It's yeah, a healthy, so healthy foundation.
You want to have your hyaluronic acid because it's hydrating and plumps your skin, makes it look nice and dewy. And then you want to have your niacinamide because it's an antioxidant. We have a lot of sunscreens we offer here at our office that have niacinamide incorporated in them.
And it's a smoother too, isn't it? Like niacinamide helps to like
smooth. It makes it look really smooth. Yeah. And so I tried the makeup, came to work, and the next morning everyone's like, wow, your skin looks good. Your skin looks good.
Yay!
So, you know, when somebody else says it, like you might think it looks good, but when somebody else says it, you're like, oh, okay, okay, so I'm looking good. So I love your products, and I want to try the concealer. I want to try more stuff.
Well, we'll have to make sure we get you some right away.
Thank you. And I already bought more from Sephora.
Thank you.
I already bought. There's a bunch of different shades, so you can get the perfect exact shade for your skin.
So my Bounce foundation comes in 40 shades. My liquid whip, the medium to full coverage, and my skin tint comes in 20. And the reason why I only did 20, my concealer comes in 40 shades too. I only did 20 of the skin tint because it's a little more sheer. The skin tones and the shades are more flexible.
Okay.
So 20 shades.
So 20 shades. Yeah. I picked two of them. Because if I'm wearing my body fake tan, then I wear the darker one. And if I'm not, then I wear the lighter one. But you guys know I never really tan. I always use just fake tan or body makeup. So just to blend it all together, I use the skin
Every
tan.
Every time I'm somewhere in the sun, I think of you.
Yay!
I do. Every time I'm somewhere in the sun.
And she's always in the sun.
I'm like, what would Dr. Guanche do right now? Like, she would have a hat on. I saw you in Turks and Caicos. She would have a hat on and glasses and slathered with sunscreen.
That's right. I run from the sun. I run from the sun.
I need to run more from the sun.
Yeah, I'm going to get you a little bracelet that says, what would Dr. G do? What would DG do?
It'd be like one of those sensory, like, you know, flick your wrist.
Oh, yeah, flick you to remind you to wear your sunscreen. Get out of the sun. You know, I laid in the sun almost daily until I was in my 20s. And then once I started doing, I was a dermatology resident. I started understanding what exactly the sun is doing to your DNA. And I started removing skin cancers and seeing photo aging and seeing sun protected versus sun damaged skin, even on the same person's body. And I suddenly could not lay in the sun. Knowing what's happening to my skin in the sun, I literally could not, even though I wanted to be tan. So I've figured out every other way I can to look tan and not actually have the damaging UV on my skin. So that's very important.
I think sun tanning is very generational too. I think, you know, when I was young, it was, and I grew up in beach communities, you know, in Southern California, and everybody just like baked in the sun all the time. I remember like iodine and baby oil, like just literally frying yourself in the sun. And
we are now picking up the pieces from that era, that entire like 10-year era of frying yourself in the sun.
But I can tell you the younger generation now is so aware of it, you know, and I'm so happy that, you know, the sunscreen is just a regular.
It's a given.
It's a regular thing now.
Yeah, our society is much more savvy, much younger about beauty and, you know, the sunscreen, the layering of products, the good skincare and all that, and also sun avoidance. So some people think you can just put sunscreen on and you could just go out in the sun. And as long as you have your sunscreen on, you're fine. But I'm like, not only that, but you have to avoid the sun. Don't lay in the sun with your sunscreen on because you're still getting sun.
Sure.
So I try to talk to people about that. And, you know, when I say skin cancer, they're unfazed. But if you say wrinkles and brown spots and premature aging, suddenly they're like, oh, maybe I won't go in the sun then.
Yeah. And it's funny because it doesn't show up for years. You know what I mean? I think, right? Am I right?
You're right.
Yeah.
I mean,
because and I'm seeing some little brown spots I might come see you about that are kind of showing
come
up.
Come see me.
Oh, you know, I'm a baby though. I'm like, I'm pain
Zero
adverse.
Pain tolerance.
You are, Jess. But I am.
It just means you're a sensitive person.
I'm a very sensitive person. Yes,
good.
I am.
So I want to segue into being a boss babe again, because I am always thinking about growing. I'm very driven and I want to expand as much as possible. And was there a phase in your growth where you felt like the demand was outrunning your capacity, or you you needed to adapt quickly and get enough staff and employees and enough manufacturing and enough everything? Was there like that running phase where you had to either expand or not? Or do you remember that?
Yeah, happening? I mean, that phase happened a couple times. And the reverse has also happened, where I've wanted to shrink my footprint, you know? So I grew the brand.
Yeah.
And, you know, Beauty Blender, the tool, we experienced explosive growth after Sephora. Because once Sephora North America found that it was a hit, then the rest of the Sephoras around the globe wanted to bring Beauty Blender on. Mm-hmm. And not only Sephora's, but then there were other parallel retailers that, you know, and you kind of always want to make sure you distribute in these parallel channels, because if anything happens to your relationship, you want to still be able to have a business, right? Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. Yeah, there was explosive growth. Luckily, you know, for that phase of the business, I did have an amazing woman that helped me make Beauty Blender from the very beginning and helped me grow my business. And she had a lot more business experience than me. I was a makeup artist. So, you know, I was not a business person. I did not go to business school. So for me, it was such a blessing to have her as a mentor and someone that could help me kind of pace the business and try to figure out how to grow the business. We kept the business very small in the beginning, as long as we could. I used to have the business in LA, and part of learning that phase and that growth was moving the business to Pennsylvania, where it now stands, where I live in Pennsylvania. I live here, but I also, I'm a resident and live in Pennsylvania because my business has been there for so long. And the meat and potatoes of my business is there. The operations, the warehouse, the planning, the shipping, everything is out of Pennsylvania because this woman would not move. She lived in Pennsylvania.
I see. And she would not. I was just trying to think, like, why Pennsylvania?
I'm she like, refused to move to California. She was like, listen.
Is she a MBA? Is she a...
No. So the way I made Beauty Blender as a traveling makeup artist, you know, traveling with my celebrity clients, when I knew I wanted to make this sponge, when I didn't want to sit on the side of the set anymore and cut these sponges and I need to figure out how to actually manufacture them.
Yes.
Because by this time, other makeup artists were like, what are you using? How did you do that? So I was like, okay, on my hiatus, I need to figure this out.
Make this into something for,
So I started traveling and I would look on the back of all the packages of sponges. If you go into a pharmacy or anywhere where you go buy cosmetic sponges, I would look to see who is manufacturing or distributing beauty sponges. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And literally, there was only like two or three companies in the whole world, really, that were making these materials. Mm-hmm. And the only one that was in the United States happened to be in Pennsylvania.
Oh.
And she worked for that company. So that's how I met her. So when I realized and I, you know, came to the conclusion I need to call this company in Pennsylvania. And kids, this was before Google. This was before, I mean, you called 411 information on your phone and you call the company and you speak to an actual person. People don't do that much anymore, but you speak to a person.
Are y'all listening?
I called and I said, I need to find somebody in product development. I have a product that I want to make. And I'm sure they thought, oh, there's a crazy lady on the other side of the phone. Yeah. But they connected me with this woman who I'm telling you ended up working with me, helping me make Beauty Blender. She ended up leaving her company and coming to work for me.
Yeah.
And she worked with me. Her name is Catherine Bailey. And she worked with me for many years. And as a matter of fact, today she still works with me as an advisor.
Uh-huh.
But she's no longer in the position of president where she was.
Yeah.
You know, when we moved into making cosmetics, that was a little bit out of her realm of knowledge. Mm-hmm, so that's why she still works on the tool side. But that's how it happened. And when we got big, it was her savvy and it was her planning that helped me grow the Beauty Blender business.
I love it. You know, I'm noticing something about you, and I've known you for a little while, but I'm noticing that you always give credit and you always give opportunity to others. And so do you think that's one of your causes of success or your hallmarks of success?
Maybe. You know, I really, it could be. It could be. I'm really very aware of what I know and what I don't know. And I've always been pretty good at finding people that can do the things I don't know how to do. And I never try to act like I know those things. So I would never take credit for something that I don't know how to do. Like even Beauty Blender in its inception, I started when I decided that I wanted to make these beauty material sponges. I had a girl working for me in my department, and I brought her in with me because there was a moment in time where she did something and I was kind of like, maybe I should do that. Maybe I should think about that. Maybe for my product, maybe I could do, and it was just because it was like a little something she did, I brought her in, but I just feel like it's good karma. I think you need to start any foundation for any business that you do with authenticity and good intention, right? And those,
and keep relationships.
And keep relationships, because those positive kind of very fundamental building blocks of your business will carry you forward, I hope.
Well, obviously you're there. I feel like sometimes I say I'm like mining for diamonds. Like I find people that they come and they join me, they join the team, and then they show an interest in something, they show an ability in something. And then I don't say, oh no, that's not what you do. This is your job description. This is what you do. I let them go a little bit further. Like I have a PA that used to work for me, Wendy. I hope she's listening. She said she was listening to my podcast. And when I started with her, I had like 1,000 Instagram followers, and I had a lot of celebrity photos. So either they were patients or I met them because of my patient who was a producer or whatever, and somehow affiliated with them. And she said, oh, I keep going to these PA dinners, and I say who I work for, and they're like, oh, I know her from Instagram. Do you know that you're Insta famous? I go, I'm not Insta famous, like whatever. I go, I don't think so. So she started getting very systematic about my social media, because her practice wasn't, well, I was training her. In the beginning, you train your PA. And so she didn't have her own patients yet. And then she would sit on our work phone. And I don't think we even had a separate work phone at the time. She was using her own phone, logged into my Instagram and doing engagement and doing stories. She goes, you need to do stories every day. And you need to do this. And you should follow some of the people that are influencers that are like you so you can learn from them. And da 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 da. And she did all this. And next thing you know, I have thousands and thousands. Like, I don't know. 10,000, 12,000, and I'm getting invited to speak at stuff and do all this. And I'm eternally grateful to her. But when she first started doing that, I would be down the hall seeing a patient. I would look and see her on the phone and be like, what is she doing? Like, she's supposed to be seeing patients. But I waited. I didn't say, no, don't do that. Your box is to do this, this, and this. And I just let her run with it a little bit, because she had a passion for it. Mm-hmm. When I see someone has a passion and they feel they can do something really well, I let them go further with it and see what comes of it. And like my whole, my social media presence, I probably wouldn't have gone down that road, at least as quickly, without her. So it's kind of like mining for diamonds. You find people and they make you better. They give you ideas, or they expand you in a way you never pictured. That wasn't on my mind at all, to like go down any social media route. And look, it's pretty big now. Not huge, like, but it's decent size.
You're
fun. Awesome. Yeah. I love it.
No, it's awesome. And I agree with you too. Like, I like that saying, mining for diamonds. I will say, in my journey in the last couple of years, I have learned to be a little more specific. When my business, but with that same intention, right? Mm-hmm. So you look for potential in people, right?
Right.
You look, where someone is at the moment you meet them isn't necessarily where their best use is, or they're even what they see for themselves, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody is entering a business at a certain level, hoping to grow.
Right.
So recently, when we went into the color category, I did look for a new president for a couple reasons. Kathy, who was with me, like I said, forever, and I'll be forever grateful, and she's still with me and working with me. But she had grandchildren. It was like time for her to. She was older than me, and it was time for her to kind of enjoy life a little bit. And hey, we had done great, so it was a good time for her. She had money. She was like good, right? Mm-hmm. So when I brought in my new president, this gentleman named Carsten Fischer, I found him living in Japan. He is worked.
How did you find him?
Big executive for Shiseido for many years. I found him through a recruiter.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Remember hiring people that know what to do, you don't know how to do? Like, I didn't know how to find him. So I had someone to find
exactly.
him. Right.
Exactly.
So anyway, long story short, what he's taught me and his expertise, because he is a very seasoned executive at big companies, like Shiseido owns NARS and Bare Essentials and Laura Mercier and like all these brands that he ran. It's good to see people's potential. What he has taught me is you see people's potential, but you have to hire more for specifics now.
Right.
Because I did a lot of what you were saying, like especially being a smaller business, I was more concerned with, how do I say it? Like I was more concerned with like the family aspect of the business, right? I wanted everybody to really communicate because communication is key. So everybody needs to work together.
Right.
And so that means you have to have clear communication. Mm-hmm. And as long as everybody's intentions and goals are the same, you think people work in that direction, right?
Right.
But what you find out is that everybody might have their own description of the goal.
Right.
Or their own description of how that journey is supposed to take place.
Right.
And then that's where the conflicts come in because people have different opinions of what that is. So the management of the people and the actual placement of these people now, I'm a little more intentional about.
Okay.
Because I want to see more of like, and I vet them out more now too. I do more back channeling and trying to figure out, you know, like how did they work with this department? How did they work with that department? How did they, you know, collaborate with, you know, your retail partners or, you know, whatever. So I'm a little more specific than I used to be, but you know, again, it's just a part of my journey. Our businesses are so different.
Oh,
right?
No.
So many ways.
I think you're right. But I think that what you're explaining to us all is how do you go from being a mom and pop shop to expanding into an empire or expanding into a large business model, and it's not the same. Obviously you can't have, you know, to some extent when you're wanting to grow, it's that family feeling. You want everybody happy and everyone, you know, sort of in a pod of, I don't know how to explain it, but I hear what you're saying.
I know what you're saying too. And I try very hard, even though my business seems to be so big to everybody. And listen, it's a global business,
but how many employees do you have now?
Well, okay. So you know how I said we grew and then we shrunk?
Yeah.
So at one point I had like 175 employees.
Wow.
During COVID, I restructured. You know, people stopped wearing makeup for a year and a half. And that was one of the most challenging, hardest times in my whole journey because I had been that girl that wanted a family business, you know, and I still am. Like I still want and I love every one of my employees and I'm concerned about them. I do not take the honor of, you know, supporting them lightly because I know the way I support them is how they support their families, you know? But it was a very painful thing because I had never shrunk my footprint. I had only been growing. And I had so much retention within my business because it's always better to promote from within, right?
Right.
When you see that potential and you see somebody and you want to, you know, you look at what they're doing now, but what you think they can do or what they'd be good at, you want to give them that opportunity if that's their goal, you know, if that's their path. So that was the way I ran that business.
Right.
So during COVID though, I mean, my payroll was incredible and my overhead was insane and people stopped wearing makeup. So what do you do? I own my business 100%. I don't have any financial investors. I write the checks.
And
people stopped wearing makeup. So, you know, and thank God I had Carsten at the time because he was and is to this day still so savvy, not just from a management operations perspective, but from a financial perspective. So we were able to shrink our footprint in a way where we were still managing every department. Everybody was still very effective, but I was able to reduce the amount of overhead I have now. So now I have maybe like 70 employees.
Right.
As opposed to 170 employees.
So everybody went through this pandemic, right? We keep saying like, oh, I went through it, you went through it, everybody went through it. So how do you deal with, like, or do you still struggle with the emotional aspects of something like downsizing? Like when you had to have people who used to work for you not work for you? Like I find that a struggle. So I just eat it. Like at this level, I can do that. Your level, obviously you can't do that. That's like a huge company with a lot of employees, but you know, most of the time I'll just not pay myself during like 2008. I didn't pay myself for a while because it was so bad. And there were times when we had no patient scheduled, none.
Yeah, I've done the same thing. 100%. Yeah. I've done the same things.
When you grow to a big company, it's harder, right? Don't you find you had to do the downsizing? And then how do you cope with that? Like, in your own.
Yeah. Listen, I've done the same thing, and I've done it in order to afford other things. Right. You know what I mean? You make sacrifices. And of course, like I'm a really sensitive person, mm-hmm. right? So letting anybody go was very difficult for me. So I wanted to make sure at the very least, you know, because I don't know if it's like not, you know, not being popular when you grow up or what, I don't know what that is,
but yeah, like I don't want people to be everybody's best friend.
Yeah. I don't want them to be mad at me or like, you know, I'm so sorry or whatever, where I have other friends that are boss babes. They're like,
too bad.
Cold-hearted bitches. They're like, sorry, you're gone. Like, you know, I'm not that way. So, it was very difficult. Mm-hmm. But I try to still be there for anybody that still wants to communicate with me from the past. I will always support them. Yeah. I've, you know, fortunately had some of the executives that I've had come and use me as referrals for new jobs, and they have amazing jobs now. Oh, good, and I'm so happy for them.
So it's fine, right? And they're going to be fine.
Yeah.
I think it's that feeling of like,
yeah,
responsibility.
It really is tough, but I can even say like during COVID, right? I mean, I stopped paying myself so I could pay my people. I'm not one of those people that I'll just keep paying myself and then you got to go. No.
Yeah. You know, all the business books, by the way, you guys, because I've read about.
They don't tell you to do that.
They say pay yourself first.
Yeah.
Pay yourself first. So I've, you know, like when I do yoga upstairs in my bedroom, all my books are there. They're all either like Eckhart Tolle or they're Abraham Hicks or they're business books. Book Yourself Solid and The Millionaire Mind and like all these things in business books. But they always say pay yourself first. But I don't know. I mean, everybody's a little bit different. I guess we each can succeed in our own way with our own philosophy and make it work. And I think, you know.
I didn't get a paycheck from Beauty Blender for the first 8 years.
8 years, you guys.
Yeah. I didn't get a Beauty Blender paycheck for 8 years. Everything we made, I reinvested into the business for manufacturing and supply and demand.
Yeah, we hear this over and over, right? We
like, yeah, and Bezos, trust me, when I would listen to different people that wanted to talk to me about the business, or that I would have meetings, and they would be like, "Well, you're paying yourself first, aren't you?" And I'm like, going in my mind, I'm just saying,
yeah,
because I don't want them to think I'm stupid. But I was like, but no, I was not paying myself.
Yeah.
I was not taking a paycheck. I was making sure that the bills were paid, the lights were on, and I had products to sell, and
yeah,
that would mean. That's why, you know, it's so funny. I would still work on set. And every time I would show up on a set as a makeup artist on a TV show or whatever, I had, you know, there's certain people you see all the time. There's a couple makeup artists like, why are you here? I'm like, because I have to work. And they were like, you have a brand at Sephora.
They're like, you're a gazillionaire.
Why are you on set? And I'm like, because I'm a makeup artist. Because I like my job. Because I need the money. I need to work. You think the light switch just turns on and suddenly money's falling from the sky? No, it doesn't work that way.
That's exactly right. And, you know, even as much as there's a lot of controversy about Jeff Bezos right now, I think there's quite a number of years where he worked in the minus with zero income on Amazon, wanting the prices to be as low as possible and the delivery as fast as possible. So I think it's like 10 or 12 years where he made no money and lived in this and had this little tiny crappy office and everything. Now, I'm not making a judgment on everything about him, but I just think that you hear that story a lot. Mm. And it's the people that have the passion and believe in what they're doing, but are willing to like not get the instant gratification, but look at the long term and, you know, stay the course. So yeah. I'm like, so admire you so much. Now, you've recently won a bunch of awards.
Yeah.
Like I was asking you what award you just won, because I saw it on social media, but you're like, well, there's a bunch of them, like 12 of them. So,
I never take them lightly, and I appreciate all of them, but my brain is so jam-packed with like day-to-day stuff I have to really think about. You know, I don't always remember all of them.
One of them was the Woman of Color Business.
Yeah, I've gotten several of those, and there's been really amazing tributes to me as a woman of color entrepreneur that I won.
Them.
And, you know, Forbes put me in the very first issue of 50 Over 50, which I'm over 50 years old, and being an entrepreneur for Mika Brzezinski's, I don't know, this initiative that her and Forbes are doing, which is really awesome, because I think, you know, ageism is something that you deal with a lot, I'm sure, because you deal with a lot of ladies that come in here and want to, you know, look their best, and we all should. And I promote that too, because I think like numbers don't really tell the story, right? So you could be over 50 years old and be just, you know, hitting your stride, and be doing well. So that was really an honor. And I have a lunch next week with First Lady Jill Biden with the 50 over 50 women for Forbes magazine, which I'm super excited about. Nice. I mean, I think I just won my 13th Best of Beauty Award from Allure magazine.
Love.
There's just been CEW of female entrepreneurs. There's a lot. I'm very, very blessed. I'm very lucky, but I'm also very short on memory cells.
That's okay.
You know,
I will tell you one thing, and I think that increasing bandwidth as a businesswoman is one of my goals. There's so much I want to do. I feel like I've only scratched the surface. So just listening to you, I'm like a sponge. I'm the sponge. I should be wearing pink because I want to hear all this, and I'm fascinated by this. I could pick your brain for hours, but we were just talking about how you're like, I don't want to hear about everything I have to do until the day before the time. Like, I want to hear a long-term timeline of, I think I know what's coming up, but from day to day, you focus on what you need to do that day. And it's so funny because my team is here listening to that. And I think that they experience that on some level, right? They experience that if I'm not ready for that information, when I need that information, I'm like, okay, where am I? Can you text me the address? Where's the set? Where am I going? Blah, blah, blah. And then I get all the information because I'm ready for it. And I think if you fill your brain up with everything you have to do in the next month, then you might feel like it's insurmountable. Like you might feel,
it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming.
Overwhelmed. And yet you can do it, but you also need a team, right? So I would love to hear from you how you communicate, because you were talking about how you have the meetings and how you, because as I try to expand, as business people try to expand, I always wonder, like, how do you keep up communications, and how do you grow like that?
Mm. Yeah. So, you know, everybody does it differently, right? So for me, I'll tell you, one of my pet peeves is if somebody tells me, well, I already told you that. Or like, if I say, where do I have to go? And they're like, I sent it to you.
It's not a peeve, but they already know. No, they've told me 12 times.
If they say to me, when I'm asking you on the phone, like, okay, your next meeting is at 2:00 and you have to be at so-and-so's office. And I said, can you send me the address? And they'll be like, well, it's in your email. I'm like, no, I need you. If I'm asking you, it's because I need you to send me the address again. I don't need you to tell me that I have a bad memory. I need to get it now so I can put it in my navigation and get there. I mean, that's...
It isn't even your
memory.
And I
don't mean to be like a bitch about it, but like, don't tell me I already told you. Just get me the information.
Yeah. It's not even your memory. It's the fact that you've got a lot of information coming in. So people think like, I already told you that, but Liz just told me what we need to do about payroll. And Jenny just told me about what we're going to order before the end of the year. And my husband just called and there's something going on at the house and then
my life is several dimensions,
yes,
right?
There's all this information coming in, and then I'll have like 300 emails a day. And I'm sure you have even more. obviously on a million times scale, but I'm just saying, like, when you say send me the address, it sounds exactly like me, because they'll be like, yeah, it's in the email.
Like, I'm like, mm-mm.
I don't know. I'm going to search my phone for emails. It might not be the most recent one from ET. It might be from this other one. Just send me the latest one. That's the one I'm going to today.
Right. Like right now. Like, I don't need you to remind me. Yeah. I just send it.
Give me the stuff so I can do today, right now, what I need to do right now today. And then.
So what I was saying about my calendar is just that, like, so every week from Monday to Friday, I have a series of regular meetings. Mm-hmm. And every day I meet with a different department. Mm-hmm. So one day might be creative, one day might be marketing, which is a part of creative, but different. One day is product development, one day is complete, like, LA office meeting. Another mm-hmm. one is Pennsylvania. So every day I have a series of meetings. And in those meetings, we talk about, you know, the 3-month plan, because we plan in 3, 6, and 12 months. Beauty products, I mean, like, I know we're right now, I don't know when you're going to broadcast this, but it's around the holidays right now. And, you know, I'm not going to be able to think about Christmas for about 2 weeks. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. then I start thinking about Christmas again. Like, in January, I'm thinking about Christmas again. I'm thinking about Christmas 22, 23.
Right.
So, you know, so there's the long-term planning we do.
Right.
And then there's the, like, biannual planning we do. Mm-hmm. Then there's the quarterly planning we do. And then, so for my assistants, so I'll, with those time increments, I will set, like, satellites out into the mm-hmm. calendar. So I know there's certain things I'm doing.
Time points.
That I'll know for next year, I'll know for 6 months from now, I'll know from 3 months from now. And then you get into the monthly, mm-hmm. then the weekly. So there's some repetition in the information that's always given to me. So I try not to remember it every time I hear it, right? Mm-hmm, because I'm going to hear it in the year, I'm going to hear it in the biannual, I'm going to hear it in the quarterly, and then I'm going to hear it in the monthly. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. every week, like, I don't want to hear it.
But, like, it gives you, like, an overview, but you don't
right.
hear every detail. Yeah.
So then every week, my executive assistant, every day she wakes up, because, you know, it, depending where I'm at, like, right now I'm on the West Coast, right? So, mm-hmm. but my East Coast office opens up on East Coast hours, and my mm-hmm. East Coast office always opens up at East Coast hours. So when I wake up on the West Coast, my office has been open for 3 hours. Uh-huh. So I wake up to, like, pages of emails, uh-huh, right? Uh-huh. She will email me in the morning and just literally tell me what my day is. Now, most of the time I know what that is, but there's a little some surprises that slip through that I don't know. Mm-hmm. But that is my live and die by calendar, because mm-hmm. It allows me not to worry about what I'm doing in a week or 2 weeks. I can just focus on what I'm doing that day, knowing pretty loosely what I'm doing for the rest of the week. That's mm-hmm. why sometimes when I make appointments, I have to cancel them.
No
I have
comment.
To reschedule, because maybe I forgot about something. And I've learned
not to make my own appointments that often. Like, if
I say, either.
Oh, I'll have a conference call with you at 12:30 on Tuesday, and then I realize, oh, I have a conference call.
When
or Instagram
I try
Live
to manage or, my own calendar, yeah. it messes everybody
up. It's a disaster.
Up. Yeah.
So it's a disaster. But, like, oh, I would ask you, like, I asked my friend Heidi, she's a dermatologist, she has a giant practice, and she is in Dayton, Ohio, has 5 employee doctors, like, this whole, like, thing. And I said, like, how do you do it? She's like, well, I have a personal assistant, and then I have a personal assistant at home, at work. So I have, like, the one that covers all my personal life. What does she call it? A house manager or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then I have another one who handles my calendar, my work stuff, and that two of them work together, actually, mm-hmm. to make sure whatever you have personal life blends and melds in. I was like, wow. But then I started thinking, like, wow.
No, it's very efficient.
That could be really cool. Mm-hmm. That's like,
I have an executive assistant, Yura, uh-huh. Yuraman, and then I have a personal assistant right now, Karina. Mm-hmm. And I had a personal assistant in Pennsylvania for my other house uh-huh. and my other office there. Okay. She recently just moved to Florida. I know. And so, but I'm okay. It's all good. You know, I'm a big girl. I can take care of what I have to take care of. But it is really efficient to have, you know, an interface between your executive assistant, your personal assistant, mm-hmm. and those schedules meshing, because then It only messes up when I try to intervene.
When you try to and take make my initiative.
Own, yeah, and I try to be like, oh, I feel so bad. They're making all my appointments. Let me just make my own appointment, and then I'll screw everybody up. So I don't do it anymore.
Yeah. No, I mean, sometimes I literally feel that way. Like, oh, I don't need to get Liz involved because I can handle this myself.
It's next too much. You know, what are all these assistants? Like,
I don't need all this. I could do it myself. But having said that, you are the common thread that when someone moves to Florida, when something happens, when there's a pandemic, when there's a problem, the buck stops with you and you
100%.
Have to rebuild, carry on, do the thing. So you don't do everything yourself, but you have to be the driving force, like the leader and the driving force behind.
Well, you have to take responsibility for everything.
Responsibility
you have to take responsibility
movement.
For all the mistakes, all the good, all the bad.
Yeah. All the good and all the bad. Mm-hmm. So, So, okay, I'd ask you, what's your definition of beauty?
You know, confidence.
Oh, I like
confidence.
That.
So, whatever makes somebody feel confident allows them, I think, to put their best person, their, I hate to say their best face forward, but it really is, you know. I always used to say as a makeup artist, like the people that I did the most beautiful makeup on, like I'm technically a great makeup artist. I can do anybody's makeup, corrective, beauty, innovative, whatever. But the ones that just always seem to have that extra little oomph was when I really loved them.
Yeah.
You know, when I loved them as human beings and I really loved them, I was able to make them look their best. And then that allowed them to go out and do what they had to do at their best level. So
right.
I think it's confidence. I think beauty is kind of like an essence, you know, almost like a mood. It's almost like there's physical beauty, right? And we all can try to maintain and create physical beauty, and we can use cosmetics and we can use, you know, modern medicine and technology, but really, if you're vacant inside, it's a disconnection. So I think it's confidence.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I wrote a book, it's called 7 Days to Sexy that I wrote. And I really feel like confidence is everything. I say it could take 7 days to be sexy, 7 weeks, 7 months, but it could take like 2 minutes. You could just exude that sexy, confident, the way you walk, the way you make eye contact and all that. And everything I do every day is with the purpose of giving people more confidence.
Confidence, yeah.
Yeah, making them smile bigger, making them more likely to take the date, go out on the date, or apply for the job, or
just like live
just
their life.
Feel great. Yeah. Like feel great. Like it's just like when you're person just zhuzhed my hair, your makeup artist, by the way, her makeup artist came
Glam
with her.
By Natalie. Natalie's
Glam
awesome.
Glam by Natalie. Follow her on Instagram. And she, she's like, oh, let her do fix your hair. And my hair was fixed, but it had already flattened out because I worked this morning. And she just like made it bigger and flowier. And it's just like it's a boost, right? It just makes you like that next level of feeling great. But I know confidence, the kind you're talking about, is the immovable confidence. But I do feel like there's some little zhuzhings we can do along the way.
Oh, I'm all about the superficial. I'm like, don't get me twisted. Like I you know, I'm here for it. I create makeup and I'm a makeup artist. So that's all, you know, superficial.
Yeah.
But really, when the two connect, though, when all of the things you do on the outside and the inside, that's what I'm talking about.
I love it. Is there someone who inspires you, who's your mentor, who you looked up to or you look up to now, that is the person that you idolize, maybe? Or,
you know, that's an interesting question. I don't really idolize anybody.
No.
I don't think I do. I don't think I really idolize anybody. People,
you are the idol.
Different people. Well, different people inspire me every day. You know, I'm inspired by, you know, the lady I see sitting at the bus stop, knowing that she got up at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning to go to work, and then is sitting at the bus stop going home, and I'm driving in my beautiful car, and I look at her and I just go, damn. You know, that is amazing. Like, I hope that one day, whatever it is she's doing, that she is happy.
Blossoms.
You know, blossoms. Like, I get inspired by different things, you know, and I don't really have any idols because I worked in entertainment. Like, I don't know, like, I don't idolize. Right. I know the work involved in creating these images, and I know that they're all produced, you know, and so I don't know. I don't really have those kind of idols. You know, I really do. I do like the Spanx lady. What's her name? Oh my God. I'm so bad. The one, she just sold her company for gazillions of dollars. Like, Sarah Blakely. Thank you. Sarah Blakely for me, even when I was starting Beauty Blender, she was somebody that I thought, oh my God, she created Spanx because she was solving a problem. Yes. She was going out that was totally what happened with Beauty Blender. So kind of being able to watch her journey has been very inspirational to me. Yeah. I will say that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was looking for. I do see a lot of, I see some celebrities and I don't get starstruck. I do admire them. I admire their work and their talent, but I don't get, you know, shaky or scared or anything like that, because I see that they're humans just like all the rest of us, and that wouldn't serve them if I got like that anyway. I wouldn't be able to do what I do for them objectively if I got nervous. But like, people I admire, like it sounds funny, but I love Benjamin Franklin because he accomplished so much in his life, in his one life.
Or Winston Churchill. Ben Franklin Award.
You did?
See?
Oh my gosh. No way. No way.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
You too?
No, I understand. I think because we live in, you know, where we live here on the West
Coast.
We're
desensitized, I guess,
the entertainment and the fantasy of celebrity is so a part of the everyday life here. I think it's very different for us.
Do you have a favorite inspirational quote?
Okay, so I did know you were going to ask me this question. And so I have to say, honestly, I'm not a big reader because I don't like to read. I love reading. I just don't have any fucking time to read.
No fucking time.
And I'll start a book, I'll read 10 pages and fall asleep on a plane, and then I just sleep the rest. I mean, so I picked out a few of my inspirational
quotes. That's what I do. I look on my phone every morning when I give my quote. Some I have memorized, but
I was thinking about you last night, and I was like, what am I going to say to her about all of these damn quotes? If you can see all the quotes that I have in my phone, I snapshot them when I see them, I always think one day, oh, I'm going to post this. I'm going to be so clever. I'm going to post this. And I never post it. And then I just have like all these quotes on my wall. But this one, I love Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And, you know, I think it's so fitting, especially in these days where she said, women belong in all places where decisions are being made, period. You know, we belong in all those places. I mean, so that's one that I think is really strong.
Yeah.
But then I also have my little,
but
you
then
know,
she also
then I have my more snarky ones that, you know.
We want to hear the snark.
I remember I posted this out one day and a couple people in my office was like, God, was that quote about me? And it was like, oh my God, they so told on themselves.
Took it personally.
Because I said, everything that's slick, don't slide. Just because I let it slide, don't think you're slick.
And they
were like, oh my God, like, did you find out? Did you see what I did? Did you hear what I did? And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I just like the quote. And they were like, oh,
we just told on ourselves. She noticed that. honestly, I have to say, I have some employees and I do not address everything that happens. I mean, that's what that's saying. I let it slide does not mean that I didn't notice it, but you pick your battles.
You pick your battles.
And you choose, like, and it happens, and then it happens again, and then you start saying, you know what?
When it becomes a problem, then you got to bring it up. Yeah.
Yeah. So because I do it less often, I feel like people take it seriously.
Yeah.
If I was constantly saying something about everything, then they'd be like, oh, that's just her complaining. But
then
when
no one would
don't.
Listen to us ever.
Exactly.
Because we'd be complaining all the time.
Not that
there's, you know, everybody's doing everything wrong. That's
no,
not
everybody's
right.
Everybody's doing everything right. But once in a while, there'll be stuff and you're like, okay, I'm just going to let this slide and we'll see.
Yeah.
You know, and
it may annoy me right now, but in the big scheme of things, it's not a big deal.
Is it
so
worth
let's just
it?
Keep
because
it moving.
You can do one little dot like this and say one little thing, like a little touch, and it's like someone just goes flying off into space. It's like this very delicate thing where you didn't mean it to even be that big of a deal. And it's just one little comment and then it just like gets amplified.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be really judicious about how you address and which things you address and at what point you decide that it needs addressing or not.
Well, so. I don't know. Has this happened to you? Because mm-hmm. this is something that I learned in the last 3 years. And it was, again, my new guy, Karsten, who's come in. Mm-hmm. You know, we would talk about the team. You know, we have our executive roundup. And, you know, he'll say, well, for example, the team is very concerned and they feel, I'm just making this up. This is not how he says, but I'm just giving you an idea. Like, oh, the team is really concerned. And they want to make you happy because they feel like you need X, Y, and Z. And I'll just sit there and look at him and go like, I never said that. I never said that. And he said, he's taught me this. He said, Rianne, when you whisper, they take it like a shout, like a spring. So if I'm in a meeting and I say, well, I don't really like that. I think we should be doing this. Then all of a sudden they're like, we need to be changing. God. Like, you know, and yeah, it's just you know, so it's kind of like along the lines of what you're saying. Like sometimes you say things and it's just like a little or comment. It could just be
amusing. Like it's not even what you're going to do, but you might, or I wonder if, you know, I don't know. One time someone didn't show up to my podcast. I was kind of upset because I had everything set up for him and he didn't show up and he didn't let me know. And we called him and then, and he knows who he is if he's listening to this podcast because we might still have
him
on.
He's got those calendaring issues.
That's what he said. He said he didn't get his assistant involved and didn't really plan it correctly. But whatever. At the end, I'm sitting in my office going, what the hell am I doing? Like, do I even want to do this? Like, but it was just that thing. That you do sometimes and then people are like, wait, are you gonna stop doing the podcast? I'm like, no, what are you talking about? It was just like me venting, but you now have to be careful of everything you say so that it won't be taken as like, oh, now she's gonna do this, you know, and I'm like, not planning on that.
You're whispering, but they're hearing a scream.
Yeah. Exactly. So everything has to be super gentle and super easy.
So you pick your battles.
Like, wait, what did you like? Yeah. Mm-hmm. For sure. So we have a wheel. We're going to have you spin.
Oh, the Wheel of Fortune.
The Wheel of Fortune.
I have never been able to spin the Wheel of Fortune.
Yay.
I'm like Vanna White now. Or no, is that the Wheel of Fortune? Yeah, no. She's on the Wheel of Fortune, right?
Is she?
Oh, wait, you're going to spin.
Oh, no, you're spinning it. I'm just holding it steady.
Oh.
So you won't knock it over because it's kind of hard to spin. Okay. You just take it and spin it.
I'm going
to
do it. I'm going to get the most angle.
Okay, whatever you want.
All right, ready?
Do it. Oh. Love it or hate it.
Okay.
Let me get my notes out. And let's see.
By the way, I love all your inspirational quotes that you do.
Thank you.
I really do.
Can I tell you something? I do those inspirational quotes and every day they put me in a better mood. And every day I learn a little something about the person I'm quoting.
They kind of put me in a good mood too. I look forward to them. Yeah, I do.
Thank you. And I found that recently I've become a better conversationalist because I know different authors. I know what countries they were from. And, you know, I know sayings. I have them because I have to research one every morning. So think about it. Has it been over a year that I've been doing that? It's been over a year. It's been 2 years.
You gave me quote anxiety, though. I want to tell you. That's why I had like a whole list of quotes. I'm like, what am I going to say to the woman that does quotes all the time?
Oh, you know, you could have said one I already said. That'd be fine. You know, my definition of beauty is being the best possible version of yourself, both inside and out.
I love that. That's perfect.
Yeah, I love that because it doesn't just address the external, but that inside.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, enough about me. We're going to ask you, love it or hate it, social media.
Oh, my God. I'm so conflicted. Like there's this whole ping ponging going on inside of me right now because, oh God, this is so tough because I'm addicted.
Mm-hmm.
So I love it. But as a business owner and the subject of, you know, a lot of, you know, what is it called?
Scrutiny.
Cancel culture and scrutiny and all of that. It's like, I mean, it's like a two-edged sword. It literally mm-hmm. is. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like so like split personality right now. I love it and I hate it. I don't yeah. know what to say about that. That is a hard one.
I have two words for you. Block and delete.
Oh, yeah. Fortunately, you know, I don't get a lot. And honestly, yeah, our brand doesn't. But when I see it, you know, it's like I will say, it's not that it's never happened, but it doesn't happen often. Okay. Right. We're very fortunate that we have very loving and, you know, passionate, excited fans in our, mm-hmm. in our business. But I looked at what goes on and it's just like so much misinformation mm-hmm. and just like, it just makes me crazy.
We're having a chemist on soon and he is the head of a laboratory. I think I'm going to do two episodes with him. One is going to be about common skincare ingredient myths. And the other episode will probably be about, you know, sunscreen and what the active ingredients are, because like you can villainize anything. You can villainize a beauty sponge. You can villainize anything in the media, and it's how much of it is actually true and how much of it evolves and, you know, all that. And so we just need some scientists to clarify what's going on. And so this happens in all industries where, you know, you can villainize everything.
I was going to say, unfortunately, we've had a lot of scientists involved in current events recently, and people still don't believe it.
It doesn't matter. Like, I know, but I'm hoping at least it clears it up for the people that are now confused. Yeah. Because what happens is it's that tincture of doubt. It's the casting a tincture of doubt on people to say, absolutely, is this thing okay to use or whatever? Whereas before, it's a beauty device.
Divide and conquer.
And you know, you put it on and it looks beautiful. And why is there, you know, anyway. Okay, cold weather. Since you live on both coasts, this is a good one for you. Which one? Do you like cold weather?
I love the cold weather. Oh. I do. I love it.
I like it when I'm skiing or if I'm visiting. I don't like to live in cold weather. I lived in Minnesota for a while. That was too cold.
That's very cold. I'm lucky to be bicoastal, so I get a little bit of both.
You get a little of both. So once you get sick of it, you can be in. That's the ideal. That is the ideal.
It's not really on my schedule, though. It's really based on business. But it ends up working out, let's say that.
Yeah. Well, at least you get a break sometime.
Yeah.
Okay, what about overlined lips with a lip pencil?
It's a trend. It's a look.
It's a look.
Yeah.
But you're not going to say whether you love it or hate it?
Okay, the overlined lip.
Do I have overlined lips today?
I think it needs to be monochromatic. Okay, mm-hmm. I don't want us to look like my cholas. Like, I don't want to, I don't, we probably shouldn't say that. But I mean, well, I don't really, because I am Latina, but.
She's a Latina, you guys. I don't. She can say whatever she wants.
I don't love, and it's just a personal taste, okay? I
mean, yeah, because that's, we're just, no problem.
You know, it's like everybody
Until she
has,
comes out with her line of lip pencils.
Everybody has their own taste, okay? And for me, I like a more natural kind mm-hmm. of softer makeup. I think less is more. Mm-hmm. So I don't mind an overlined lip if it's monochromatic to the color you're putting on the inside. If you're right. using it to correct a shape or create a shape, mm-hmm. I think it's fine. But just don't go crazy. Like, yeah. Like, your lips should not be touching your nostril.
No, no.
Okay.
You know which one aligner I love? I love Lip Cheat. I love, like, Charlotte Tilbury type stuff.
I love all the Charlotte stuff. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah. And it's a lot like what J-Lo does. She overlines, but with such a tan color that it gives the impression of a bigger lip, but it doesn't.
You know what's so like funny about Jen? About J-Lo? I think I told you at the beginning when we started talking, I worked with Diddy for years, right? Mm-hmm. And it was during the time that they were dating, and so I would be around a lot. Mm-hmm. And I watched her one day put her makeup on, and I was his makeup artist, so I don't know if she just thought because I was his makeup artist I didn't know how to do women, or like, you know, I don't know, she never said right. anything, but but it was cool. I was sitting in the bathroom, we were at the Beverly Hills Hotel in a bungalow, and I was just sitting there watching her. It was the first time I ever saw anybody do this. So what she would do is she would contour in this area. Uh-huh. I don't know, what do you medically call this area?
The philtrum.
Yeah, the philtrum.
And that's the Cupid's bow, right?
Yeah,
here.
She would darken it.
Uh-huh.
Then she would lighten the two outsides. Ridges. Uh-huh. And then she would take a couple different pencils, and she would not create a Cupid's bow, but create like a smooth,
rounded top. Oh, iron out the Cupid's bow.
And then she'd take the bottom lip and she would bring it down like a V. No, it would stay the same here, but it would go down like this. Oh. And then she would do all this like blending of everything and just put all this stuff on and the gloss on and everything. It was like,
She's the whole system.
That was good, Jen. Yeah.
Yeah.
I started doing that. I was like, I'm stealing that one.
She has a whole system.
Yeah, it was good.
I have to say, I don't do the filter.
That's how you made the look.
Yeah, the pucker look.
Because the contour in the philtrum made the
pucker. I see.
Yeah, it was good.
I'm going to try that when I go home.
Just a very taupey, light taupey color. Yeah, it was good.
I love it. You can get a color like that, Charlotte Tilbury, or I don't know whoever.
Get her four pan. There's a four pan that she has with two highlighters. One's copper, one's gold. Mm-hmm. And then there's two contour colors. Use that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to try that this weekend. And then one more question. Let's see. Do you like wing eyeliner?
Yeah. Who doesn't? Have you not seen my eyes? Yes, I love a wing. I'll tell you though, when Amy Winehouse came out, I was all upset. I was like talking to her, manager and the artist development at her record label because I was doing another artist at that. I was like, you need to let me. I need to work with her because I need to fix that eyeliner.
Yeah.
Because do you guys remember her eyeliner was like, I like that.
So I'm looking.
But it became a look.
I'm looking at your wing right now. You look pretty freaking gorgeous. But I see that you have a little, and it was done by?
Glam by Natalie.
Glam by Natalie. Mm-hmm. So don't forget to follow her.
Yes, I can do my own makeup, but I also have to text and email during the time before I came.
So you text and email and she does your makeup. I love it.
I'm literally like this when she's doing my makeup.
I know. I do a lot of multitasking too. I go on TikTok lives just to get to talk to my followers while I do my M Sculpt treatments. I figure I'm sitting there for 30 minutes and why not just talk to people, my followers. And yeah.
That's what women are good at. That's what we do.
We do it. But I was looking at your winged eyeliner, but it has like a smoky component just above it. Because people ask you like, do you like smoky eye or do you like wing? But you don't really have to choose, people. You can have both. You can have it all.
It's called a contour.
Yeah, it's very pretty.
So when you age and your eyes get heavier, you need to do a little more contour.
Yeah.
Smoky eye really works out well.
Yeah. No, it looks amazing.
Thank you.
Okay, you guys, we are talking to Rianne Silva, the founder and boss babe of Beauty Blender. And she also just launched a makeup line. And so it's like skin tint. What else? Concealer.
We have medium to full coverage, liquid whip foundation. Mm-hmm. We have a concealer. We have bounce radiant powder. We have always on skin tint foundation, which is my newest baby, which is a different finish. So I have two foundations. One is a more velveteen finish. Mm-hmm. Always on skin tint is more radiant and natural looking because you know the no makeup look is about to come back. It's coming back. Yeah. And then I just launched an amazing, beautiful blush that goes really well, works well with my Beauty Blender.
Ooh.
Yep, and I'm coming out with some more complexion products very, very, very soon.
Very exciting stuff.
And I'd have to kill you if I told you, so I can't.
You can't? Oh, come on now. This is what this podcast is for people to dish on the secrets. That's the whole reason we're here. So, no, but I'm thrilled to have you, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for asking me. I'm so honored to be here with you. I'm a big fan. Like, I've followed you. I followed you for months before I was brave enough to even make an appointment.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I hope people don't feel that way. You guys, make an appointment. Don't worry about it. I'm just trying to make you guys laugh.
She's hilarious.
I love making people laugh. Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us, and thanks for joining us, babies.
Thank you.
Bye.